So we come to this part of the story. This is a little bit later, and it starts off with Jesus talking to his brothers. Yes, Jesus had brothers. For those of you who go to Catholic school, what's that? He had sisters as well. For those of you who go to Catholic schools, or just to kind of set the record straight, Mary was not a virgin her whole life, because that would have been horrible for Joseph. Like, no guy would have signed up for that, okay? Seriously. You know what? He would have had to think that one through a little longer than he did. Even though the angel said it was okay, he'd have been, I don't know if that's okay, God. Okay? So in this text, and we also find in the book of Mark, it says that Jesus had brothers and sisters, okay? Born from Mary. So obviously, Mary was only a virgin until Jesus was born. Jesus had brothers and sisters. Yeah? But see, Jesus had a different father, right? Jesus' father was God. They did have the same mom. But it was a whole different deal getting pregnant when you're a virgin than getting impregnated by your husband, okay? That's a big deal to get pregnant when you're a virgin. That's a really big deal, right? Ladies, is that a big deal? If all of a sudden you woke up and you're like, uh-oh, I think I'm pregnant. I was like, that's weird. It's like we just had sex ed yesterday and I haven't done anything. Okay, sorry. Maybe a little off color. Let's get into the story. We're spending too much time here. Okay, so that was the preamble. Jesus had brothers and sisters, and we find out about his brothers in this passage. After this, and oh, by the way, remember last week we ended off a whole bunch of people deserted Jesus, right? Start with this big mega crowd of 20,000 people, and they just found his teaching was too hard for them. And so they left. And at the end of the chapter, he goes from like 20,000 people to the 12. And he says, are you guys going to leave me too? And you guys remember what Peter said? What did he say? Yeah, no, where would we go? You have the words of life. If we don't follow you, we go to hell. So no, we're going to follow you. So yeah, Peter was just kind of like, we don't have anywhere else to go. So, but he said, we believe. Even though they didn't understand, remember, they didn't even understand what Jesus was teaching, but they believed it. They believed in him. And so they followed him and they kept going. So they remained. So here we go. After this, Jesus traveled around Galilee. He wanted to stay out of Judea where the Jewish leaders were plotting his death. Okay, so we already have the Jewish leaders plotting his death. So this is, he's already well known. He's already had confrontation. You remember, I think it was a couple weeks ago with the religious leaders. They have already decided that they want to kill him. And so, because they hate him. But soon it was time for the Jewish festival of shelters. And Jesus' brothers said to him, before we get to say that, you guys know what the festival of shelters, or this is an odd translation, and it's usually tabernacles is what they call it. You guys know what that is? Oh, it's a big celebration. It's a feast, and it's like a week long. So, and they live in little huts, and that's why they call it the feast of shelters, or feast of tabernacles. They live in these little leafy huts kind of deal. So, but anyway, it's big party, big feast. Everybody is enjoying themselves, having lots of food. It's a party atmosphere, and everybody is like excited because it's the Feast of Tabernacles, and it's awesome. And I think I think this specific one was celebrating the harvest. So, yeah, it was a good one. It's joyous because all the harvest had come in, and everybody's happy, and it's like, yeah, we're done our work in the fields, and now we get the payoff with the grain. All right. Anyway, let's keep going. So Jesus' brother said to him, leave here and go to Judea, where your followers can see your miracles. So they're like, you know, Jesus, if you really want to get well known, you should go to where more people are. Because, like, Jesus is in this little hick town in Galilee. There's hardly anybody around. They're saying, why don't you go to the big city and start showing your stuff? And then, you know, lots of people will be like, ooh, Jesus. That's basically what they're saying. You can't become famous if you hide like this. If you can do such wonderful things, show yourself to the world. For even his brothers didn't believe in him. That's an interesting statement, because if I was thinking that my brother was saying he was God, I'd probably be the first one to go like, yeah, right. He's my brother. There's no way he's God. But Jesus' brothers had, of course, they were his younger brothers, had grown up, but they didn't believe who he said he was yet. They would. And in fact, eventually, they would die for him. They would be martyred for him. And James, there's a book of James in the New Testament that was written by Jesus' brother, who later came to believe and actually was head of the church in Jerusalem. And then Jude as well, who is believed, the book of Jude is believed to be written by Jesus' brother as well. Okay, let's keep going. Jesus replied, "Now is not the right time for me to go, but you can go anytime. The world can't hate you. It does hate me because I accuse it of doing evil." So get this. Jesus already has everything in clear view. He knows exactly why the religious leaders hate him. He knows exactly why the people that he talks to hates him. Because remember, it started with 20,000 people going like, wow, free food. And ends up with 12. And they're just like, you know, we can't do this. We can't believe this guy. We can't, this teaching is too hard. We got to leave. Well, here's the thing. And we're going to see it actually in this text and then next week as well. We're going to, or in 2 weeks, I guess. We're gonna see that Jesus is very direct when it comes to sin. He doesn't shy away from it. He points it out, and he just says, this is, you know, calls a spade a spade. This is sin. And his most harsh comments are for the religious people. And his probably the most softest and heartfelt conversations that we find Jesus having is with the people who are, would we would label sinners. In fact, in your small groups, that's, you're going to go through one of those examples. Okay, so, you go on, he says. I'm not going to this festival because my time has not yet come. After saying these things, Jesus remained in Galilee. But after his brothers left for the festival, Jesus also went, though secretly, staying out of public view. The Jewish leaders tried to find him at the festival and kept asking if anyone had seen him. There was a lot of grumbling about him among the crowds. Some argued, he's a good man. But others said, he's nothing but a fraud who deceives people. But no one had the courage to speak favorably about him in public, for they were afraid of getting into trouble with the Jewish leaders. See, the Jewish leaders had immense power. So when we're whispering all these things, they can't talk out loud, because if the religious leaders get wind of where this whispering is coming from, then they're in big trouble, because these guys have huge power. They had both religious and political power. And so if you had the religious leaders against you, you're in trouble. In fact, look what happened to Jesus, right? Jesus ended up, the religious leaders were responsible for killing Jesus. They were plotting to kill him even now, what we read at the start of the text. They were already plotting to kill him. Then, midway through the festival, Jesus went up to the temple and began to teach. The people were surprised when they heard him. How does he know so much when he hasn't been trained? They asked. See, this was really, really amazing. See, in Jewish culture, they had kind of a system where only the best of the best of the best would be able to study under a rabbi or a teacher. And back then, kind of the highest calling would be a scribe. And so you hear the word scribes and Pharisees sometimes mentioned in the New Testament, actually quite a bit. Well, the Pharisees were followers of certain scribes. So what would happen is you'd become a student of a scribe, and then you would follow his teaching. And so he'd be teaching on somebody else's teaching, on somebody else's teaching about the Bible. And it was just like, it was this big, long thing. So they had all this teaching, and really it was books. Books on books on books on books about the book. You guys catch that? Were you guys looking up here? See? Yeah, about another book. It's just like, and they're following all these different teaching, and they're arguing, well, this scribe says this, and this scribe says this, and then they would argue about which scribe had it right, or which scribe had the best interpretation. And we're going to find out in this passage, Jesus didn't do that. And the crowd was amazed. Because he didn't teach like the other rabbis. He didn't teach like the other scribes and the Pharisees. He had an authority that they didn't have. And it's because he went directly to the Bible and taught directly from the Bible. And the other thing was, he didn't have, you guys know what pedigree is? Like, that's true. It is, isn't it? He didn't have the right, what's the word? Help me out here. Ancestry, yeah. He didn't have the right mom and dad. You know, he didn't travel in the right circles, and his mother and father weren't famous enough or weren't rich enough. In fact, they were a very poor family that lived in a little, dinky, small town. So he didn't have the pedigree to be able to teach like he taught, because they did not expect that Jesus would be able to teach, because he was just a commoner, right? He was just a common, ordinary guy. And they were astounded. Like, how does he know so much when he hasn't been trained? Of course, he had been trained, right? Jesus knew the scriptures. We can read into this and understand that Jesus probably studied the scriptures for even from when he was a little boy. He was probably in the Bible, studying the scriptures, memorizing scripture, because Jesus knew it really, really well. Let's keep going here. So Jesus told them, this is his response to them, how do you know so much? You don't have the right pedigree. My message is not my own. It comes from God who sent me. So here we go again, right? Jesus is clarifying again to the religious leaders where his messages come from, why he's teaching, who he is, okay? Anyone who wants to do the will of God will know whether my teaching is from God or is merely my own. Those who speak for themselves want glory for only for themselves. But a person who seeks honor, person who seeks to honor the one who sent him speaks truth, not lies. Moses gave you the law, but none of you obey it. In fact, you are trying to kill me. Jesus does something quite subtle here that wouldn't have been subtle to the religious leaders. He is accusing them of wanting to commit murder. Okay? He goes to the law of Moses and says, you know, you guys are, and we'll find out again, they're still bent over Jesus healing on the Sabbath. Like, they still can't get over this. And Jesus is going to set them straight, but that's not for today. But they just can't get over Jesus. And they're just like, we want to get this guy. We're going to kill him. And he's like pointing out, okay, you know, you guys think you're so holy. You guys think, you know, I'm not speaking truth. But here's what truth is. See, the fact that I'm actually saying what God says, not for my own glory, but for his, makes it true. I'm not seeking my own glory. If I was seeking my own glory, like these guys are that he's talking to, then it would be a lie, right? Because he'd be saying all these things just to get glory for himself. But we know that later on, that Jesus gave his life up for this stuff. And so we know that he wasn't in it for his own glory. He proved it by his life and his death. So at this point, the Jewish leaders would have been really upset, okay? Well, they're always upset, right? Well, that's kind of the way super religious people are. Usually upset, right? They're upset about something, they're anti-something. But anyway, let's keep going. The crowd replied, "You're demon-possessed. Who's trying to kill you?" So now they, like, some of them were wondering, okay, is he a good guy? Well, maybe, I don't know. I think he's a lunatic. And now they're getting angry, and they're like, "You're demon-possessed. You can't say that." And basically because he's just exposed sin in their life. He's just exposed the fact that all these scribes and Pharisees and religious people are plotting to kill him and commit murder. One of the worst of the Ten Commandments to break. Well, they're all bad to break. But one of the worst is murder. And Jesus is like, "You guys are planning to kill me. Come on, dudes. You're full of sin." You remember why the world hates him? Because he accuses it of sin. He accuses it of doing evil. And so when you're accused of doing evil, even if you are doing evil, you hate it. You don't like it. We don't like it. It's our pride, right? We don't want to be accused of being wrong. being wrong is horrifying. I got three little kids, and the fact, like, they just can't handle making mistakes or being wrong, and they're just little. I'm just like, oh man, they get that from me and my wife probably. Well, my wife's not here, so I'll say my wife more. No, you guys don't tell her. See, I'm wrong already. See, I'm okay. Proves my point. Murmuring from the front row here, the young ladies, they don't like that either. All right, sorry. Let's keep going. Let's pretend that didn't happen. Jesus replied, I did one miracle on the Sabbath. Here we go. This is the Sabbath. Remember the miracle a few weeks back that we talked about where he healed the crippled man at the pool of Bethsaida or Bethesda, whichever way you want to say it. But you work on the Sabbath too. See, they accuse him of working on the Sabbath for healing this guy. It's nuts, right? It's like, he said, get up and walk. And then they accused him of, oh, that's work. Okay? Because, well, you guys actually need to, I didn't clarify this maybe a couple weeks ago, but the penalty actually in the Old Testament for working on the Sabbath was death. It was a death penalty. Here's the thing. I just read this the other day. That one of the first cases of someone being killed on the Sabbath, or being killed because they broke the Sabbath, which was the seventh day, it was the day that God said to his people, you are to rest. There was a guy gathering sticks, it says, and they caught him gathering sticks. And the sentence was that he was stoned to death. Like, that's harsh, right? No, probably the next day, I would say. No, that wasn't God's law. That was the oral law or the written law, whatever it is called. Yeah, they had a whole bunch of rules. Yeah, what's that? Did they kill? I don't know. It doesn't say. Probably not, because he would have had to have a trial. We'll find that out actually next week when we talk about how many witnesses you need. Anyway, sorry. So. On the Sabbath, you weren't allowed to work, and it wasn't that he was just picking up a few sticks. The implications is that he was doing his daily work, and God had commanded his people not to, so the penalty for it was death. Pretty harsh. But he disobeyed, and that was the penalty. So, this is a big deal, right? And so the Pharisees had made all of these extra laws, the scribes and Pharisees, so there were so many rules that you had to follow, and one of them was healing. There's like a manual on who could be healed for what diseases on the Sabbath in certain circumstances. It was just like ridiculous. Like it was just this big, it was basically this religious thing. You can do this, do that, based on nothing. The Bible said God's law was very specific. And the Sabbath, you were to rest and not work. That's it. It didn't define all the thing. It's just to rest from your labor, okay? So the Jewish leaders had made all these extra things. And so they were accusing Jesus, no, you healed the whole man and it wasn't life-threatening on a Sabbath. So you're allowed to heal if it was life-threatening. Right? It's nuts. And so Jesus is going to point out the irony here. Jesus replied, I did one miracle on the Sabbath and you were amazed. But you work on the Sabbath too when you obey Moses' law of circumcision. Actually, this tradition of circumcision began with the patriarchs long before the law of Moses. For if the correct time for circumcising your son falls on the Sabbath, you go ahead and do it so as not to break the law of Moses. So why should you be angry with me for healing a man on the Sabbath? Or in other translations, for healing the whole man? Look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. So this is basically what he's saying. He's saying, this is the Jewish custom given to Abraham, way, 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 way back, even before Moses' time, that on the eighth day, every male child was to be circumcised. Okay, actually, the eighth day was a law of Moses. The circumcision goes all the way back. You guys don't know what circumcision is? That's okay. You don't need to know. It's a guy thing. Oh, I just thought of some horrible jokes I'm not going to say. Oh, that's horrible. Okay, anyway. So, what would happen is, if the eighth day If the boy had been born 8 days before the Sabbath, they would still have to work in order to not to break the law of Moses. So Jesus is pointing out an absurdity. He said, you guys are willing to do this because you don't want to break the law of Moses. But I just healed a guy who'd been crippled for 38 years, and you're angry. Like, how silly is that? Think about it. Is that not silly? It's crazy. Okay, let's keep moving here. We're just about out of time. Some of the people who lived in Jerusalem started to ask each other, isn't this the man they are trying to kill? But here he is speaking in public, and they say nothing to him. Could our leaders possibly believe that he is the Messiah? Can you imagine this kind of murmuring and whispering getting back to the religious leaders, that the people are wondering if they believe in Jesus? The guy they hate and they want to kill? But how could he? For we know where this man comes from. When this Messiah comes, he will simply appear. No one will know where he comes from. Which is actually not true, right? These people they don't understand. They haven't looked into the Old Testament where it tells us exactly where the Messiah was going to be born. But the Pharisees actually later on get it right. It's just that they didn't realize that Jesus had been born in Bethlehem. Okay, let's keep moving. While Jesus was teaching in the temple, he called out, yes, you know me, and you know where I come from. But I'm not here on my own. The one who sent me is true, and you don't know him. But I know him, because I come from him, and he sent me to you. Then the leaders tried to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. Now, I'm not sure what happened there, but that's kind of interesting. Kind of cool, actually. That no one was able to lay a hand on Jesus simply because it wasn't God's time for him. That's pretty cool. Many among the crowds at the temple believed in him. After all, they said, and this to me seems a very logical statement. Would you expect the Messiah to do more miraculous signs than this man has done? So they're like looking back and going, like, have you seen what this guy's doing? Could there be somebody who comes who can do more than him? Highly unlikely. When the Pharisees heard that the crowds were whispering such things, they and the leading priests sent temple guards to arrest Jesus. So they're not only just kind of angry religious people, they're also cowards. They're like, oh, we don't want to go get Jesus, because they were scared of the people as well, right? Because the people were not sure about Jesus, and if they went and arrested him themselves, the people might revolt, because they might be, well, what are they doing? Isn't this the Messiah? So they send the soldiers to do the dirty work. But Jesus told them, I will be with you. Okay, now Jesus is back to his confusing ways. I will be with you a little longer. Then I will return to the one who sent me. You will search for me, but not find me. And you cannot go where I am going. The Jewish leaders were puzzled by this statement. Where is he planning to go? They asked. Is he thinking of leaving the country and going to the Jews in other lands? Maybe he will even teach the Greeks. What does he mean when he says, you will search for me but not find me, and you cannot go where I am going? Where was Jesus going that they couldn't go? Heaven. Do you guys realize the implications of that statement? What is he saying to these guys? That's what he's saying. Okay, you thought they were mad before. Now he's telling them they're going to hell. These are the religious leaders of the nation, of God's people. And Jesus is saying, and he didn't tell them, of course they're puzzled, right? They have no idea. Jesus is going, I'm going back to heaven. I came from heaven. I wasn't just born and started as a baby. I didn't have a start, but I've been in heaven forever. And now I've come down to earth. And then, in a little while, I'm going back. And guess what? You guys aren't going to be there. Heavy statement. On the last day, the climax of the festival, Jesus stood and shouted at the crowds, anyone who is thirsty may come to me. Remember the water? Remember we talked about living water, like, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago? Here he goes again, talking about living water. Anyone who believes in me may come and drink, for the scriptures declare, Rivers of living water will flow from his heart. When he said living water, he was speaking of the Spirit who would be given to everyone believing in him. But the Spirit had not yet been given because Jesus had not yet entered into his glory. So the Spirit as was given in the books of, in the book of Acts, there's a story, it's called Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit was given to the church, was given to the followers of Jesus. Okay? Jesus said, in fact, we're going to find out, he warns his disciples, I'm leaving in a few chapters in the future. I'm going to be leaving you guys. He starts talking like that quite a bit, and so they're going like, what? You know, they've been with him for almost 3 years, and he starts talking like this later on in John. You know, I'm not going to be with you anymore. I'm leaving. And they're like, what? Now, whoa, what are you talking about? But what he was talking about is that he was going to die, and that in his place, someone better was coming, that the Spirit of God was going to come. And after Jesus left, and now not only was God going to be among us like Jesus was, he wasn't just with us. You guys know what the name Emmanuel was? His name was Emmanuel. It means God with us. That was one of the names of Jesus. It means it was God with us. Now, it was a whole different level. That God wasn't just with us, that he was going to be in us. The Holy Spirit will come and live within the followers of Jesus. Very cool. That's in the future. So we're not going to get into that too much today. When the crowds heard him say this, some of them declared, surely this man is the prophet we've been expecting. Okay, the Old Testament talked about there was going to be a prophet, capital P, that this was sent from God. So some people are saying, I wonder if he's the prophet. Others said he's the Messiah. Now, the Messiah was another figure promised in the Old Testament, and it was from the line of King David. So one of his descendants would be this guy. What the Jews didn't understand at the time, but this was all going to be one guy. They thought it was a whole bunch of different guys. So there was a prophet coming, there was a Messiah coming, there was a priest coming. What they didn't realize is that Jesus would actually fulfill all of those roles. Still others said, but he can't be. Will the Messiah come from Galilee? For the scriptures clearly state that the Messiah will be born in the royal line of David in Bethlehem, the village where King David was born. So the crowd was divided about him. Some even wanted to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him. So where was Jesus born? Bethlehem. They thought he was just, sure, he had grown up in Galilee, but he was born in Bethlehem, right? When the temple guards returned without having arrested Jesus, the leading priests and Pharisees demanded, why didn't you bring him in? And here's what they said. This is awesome. We have never heard anyone speak like this, the guards responded. So they send, and I bet you these guys were the hardest soldiers they could find. Because, you know, if I'm going to arrest somebody who's a very famous and prominent figure, and could possibly, you know, incite a revolt right then and there, I'd be like, I want my best guys. Who's my best guys? Who are the guys that I can count on the most to go in there and kick some butt, okay? I want those guys. And so these guys were hardened soldiers. They sent, more than likely, they sent their best guys in to take Jesus. And what do these guys say? We couldn't take him. We've never heard anybody speak like that. And they were stunned because what they were witnessing was God become a man speaking to them. Unbelievable. Hardened soldiers going like, and they disobeyed an order from these guys. It could have meant that maybe they lost their job. More than likely, they lost a lot more than that. They might have been beheaded for disobeying an order. You know, it was pretty, yeah. No, that's Star Wars. It would have been funny, but it wasn't. Okay. It was a good try. All right, sorry. So we're just about done here. So this is what the religious leaders say to him. Have you been led astray too? They're like, you're the soldiers. Come on. Like, what really went on? So they begin to mock them. Have you been led astray too? Is there a single one of us rulers or Pharisees who believes in him? The foolish crowd follows him, but they are ignorant of the law. God's curse is on them. Then Nicodemus. You guys remember Nicodemus? Do you guys remember who he was? He was a Pharisee. And in John chapter 3, Nicodemus has this big conversation with Jesus. In fact, it's at night. And it's under the cover of darkness. Doesn't say why, but most likely because Nicodemus didn't want anybody seeing him around Jesus. Most likely. Maybe not, but that's probably what was at stake there. But Nicodemus had a great conversation with Jesus. And so these guys are saying, none of us do. But I think Nicodemus did. In fact, later on he does. Then Nicodemus, the leader who had met with Jesus earlier, spoke up. Is it legal to convict a man before he is given a hearing? He asked. They replied, are you from Galilee too? Search the scriptures and see for yourself. No prophet ever comes from Galilee. These guys did not like Galilee. I don't know what it was about Galilee, but they didn't like him. They didn't like anyone who came from there, probably because Jesus came from there, and it was a little hick town. But Nicodemus speaks up, and here's the thing. In the Old Testament, one of the things that you needed was witnesses. So if somebody did something to you, there needed to be a witness, okay? It wasn't just my word against your word. If you wanted to get a conviction in court, you needed a witness. And so Nicodemus is bringing them back to the law and going to God's law, not their own law, and going like, hold on, guys. Doesn't he need to have... is it legal to convict a man before he's given a hearing? So they're saying, oh, hold on. You know, God told us how to deal with this stuff. So he's kind of leading them back to what the Bible says. So that's where we're going to leave off. It's an awesome story. Jesus gets into it again with the religious guys the next talk. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We don't have time to do it today. Are you guys enjoying walking through John? It's pretty interesting stuff, eh? Like, John is just an incredible book. It's like, it's so interesting. Like, the story is just amazing. And so hopefully you guys are kind of getting a good picture of what's going on here. In your small groups, I just want to do a little preamble to what you're going to be talking about. The story is about a woman caught in adultery. There's a few things I want you to think about, or at least to have in your mind as you go to your small groups. A couple odd things about this story. So the story basically is that the Pharisees are up to their normal no good, and they're trying to trap Jesus. And so this is one of their ultimate schemes. They actually get a plan together and get a woman to commit adultery so they can catch her. Like, it doesn't say that, but this is what's happening in this text, okay? They actually are, it says they're trying to trap Jesus. So they set this woman up knowing that she would walk into this sin, and they're waiting to pounce on her. She's committing adultery. So they actually catch her in the act. So think about when you're going through this story, there's a few things, odd things to think about. First of all, there's no guy in the story, okay? In the Old Testament, for the woman caught in adultery, she was supposed to be stoned to death. Right? Take rocks and kill her. Adultery was huge sin against God. It still is. This is an important thing that God told his people. Do not commit adultery. This is a horrifying sin. The actual penalty is to be stoned to death. If you were a young girl who wasn't married and you were committing, part of adultery is fornication, which means sex before you're married. You were taken to your father's doorstep and stoned to death because your father was responsible for that, for allowing that to happen to you. Okay? As a dad, I can't even imagine that. Like, that would, I cannot think of anything worse than seeing that happen on my front doorstep to my little girl. I can't even. It's brutal. Now, there was also things for guys. Guys were supposed to be buried up to the neck in the sand. There'd be a rope wrapped around his neck, and one guy on each side of the rope would literally squeeze the life out of the guy. that was caught in adultery. Okay? Buried him up to the neck in sand. I don't know. No, it wasn't sand. Sorry, it was dung. It was animal poop. Okay? And so, when he died, they were supposed to release the rope and he would fall over into the dung. So he would just be covered in poo. Right? This is the guy who commits adultery. That was the penalty. This is how God viewed adultery. That's why the penalty was that severe. Okay. God did it. The people didn't. God gave them the law. Said, if this happens, this is what you do. Sorry, I'm totally cutting into your small group time here now. What's that?
God said you should bury this guy in.
Yes, because this is how God viewed adultery. He should be buried in poo. Because this is what you've done. This is how terrible this sin is, that you've committed adultery. So that would happen to the guy. Anyway, sorry, off track. That's one of the odd things in this text. There's no guy in the text. They just bring the woman. They caught her in the act. Where's the dude? Right? So it's totally a setup. The guy, they probably paid off, right? They've totally set this guy up, or this woman up. And so the woman is by herself. She's accused. She's probably half naked and totally embarrassed and totally caught. She is caught red-handed. She knows the penalty. Everybody knows the penalty. And the Jews all knew it. There's no dodging rocks. You were dead. You're a sitting duck. Okay, so that's a couple of odd things to think about, to understand when you're getting into this text. And here's the last odd thing that's just, it's horrible. Like, what are these guys thinking? First of all, they're watching, right? They're watching somebody commit adultery. So they're obviously committing lust in their heart, right? They're actually watching this. They're peeping Toms. And they think they've got this great plan to trap Jesus. So go to your small groups, find out how Jesus totally dismantles their plan. It's awesome.